Hello, everybody. This is the Gingerbread Man, and I would like to welcome you back to my home. So thank you for being here. I appreciate you. It means a lot to me every single time I get to hit the record button and I walk into this murky space because I have a bare minimum of ideas of what I want to speak about. I have a couple, like, tenets that I aspire to in my own ethical core and in all my efforts. But when speech starts for me, there's this channeling of something. And I feel it the same way when I try to do my art. When I write my poetry, which I'd like to share a little bit of my poetry with you guys today. But the biggest thing is that I'm trying to talk about and I'm trying to write about and I'm trying to draw about this thing that's really hard to talk about. And that's what mysticism is forming a personal relationship with the universe or God or any other abstract concept that you can have for what is outside of this me, this I, this personality. And what I found in my journey and what I found in my ruminations is that there is an immense space, an immense area to fall back on, to hear from outside of who I am, outside of me. The rest of me is outside of this thing that I've drawn a box around and called me, right? So I always feel slightly nervous and uncomfortable. When I stand here, I feel a speck of imposter syndrome, which is like this idea that what you're doing, you're not entitled to, you don't have the right to do it, even though honestly, philosophically, that can't exist because whatever you decide to do, you're entitled to, you know? But I still feel like I have no right to try to help. Even though it's one of the only things in this world that gives me the sense of value and fulfillment is being able to try to help somebody else. Yet, you look at the TV, you see, fake doctors and action heroes and all these concepts of what help is. And that's not even close to the truth of just being able to give your time and compassion to another person. One of the main things I stand here on the Gingerbread Man, which is my show, I am the Gingerbread Man. One of the things that I stand upon is this idea of love, this unconditional love. And that's a murky term. It's an empty term a lot of the times. It's an easy cop-out answer against evil. But the funny thing is that to truly have unconditional love, you'd have to love the evil person too, or be able to accept the evil act of somebody that you've labeled as evil. Love, for me, is an unconditional response and has something to do with that connection and that relationship with the outside, everything else. All the rest of who I am, right? So I want to push this idea of love. I want people to soften. I want to soften myself. I don't want to melt like the Wicked Witch of the West, but I want to be supple and I want to be flexible like a strong tree that has withstood all of the environmental epics thrown against it. And if it was brittly hard and resistant to any and every change and possibility, it would have snapped and broke a long time ago. And that's the kind of softening that I approach. And through that softening comes a sensitivity. Now I want to explore what it means to be sensitive to this relationship of being part of this world. Because being part of this world, involved in it, is pleasure, is pain, is things that can be considered good and things that can be considered bad. And they go hand in hand. I was reading this wonderful book by a man that I thought I wouldn't like. And I don't know why I had this internal resistance. And it's part of the reason why I bought it in the first place. It's this dude named Osho. And he's got like YouTube videos. You can listen to him talk. He's interesting. I've heard him through the years. In fact, he was one of the first, you know, people talking about this kind of shit that I ever heard. Because like back in high school, like 10th grade, I had a great friend who I've had on the show. He goes by the moniker Nameless. And I remember him showing me videos of this guy. And back then, just like the proverb from the Bible where Jesus says that some of the seeds will go by the wayside and they won't hit soil, for a long time, these seeds, these ideas of this topic had no soil to purchase inside my consciousness. And so it took a long time for me to even be able to hear some of these concepts and hear some of these ideas. And so I think that's part of the reason why I thought I didn't like Osho, is because it comes from that time period. And maybe it's a reflection on my own path, if anything. But I've reapproached the idea, and I'm reading through him. And he has this metaphor that he probably borrowed from somebody else, just like I borrow from many others too. But it's this faucet metaphor. And it's like you have this faucet, like two faucets. They each have their own little faucet turny thing to turn it on and off. And the one on the left is labeled pleasure. The one on the right is labeled pain. And you think that whenever you turn one on, the other one will turn off. But that's illogical, because when you investigate further to the entrance of like where both of these faucets go, if you look back further, they're coming from the same fucking pipe. And so whenever you turn the pipe off, both faucets stop. So if you want to turn the pleasure on, you turn the pain on. And if you want to turn the pain off, you also turn your potential pleasure off. And that comes to this awareness of what's happening, right? A lot of times in our lives, this uncomfortability that we encounter, like this Buddhist idea of dukkha, concept that there's this thirst, this never-ending desire for something, like we have a hole inside our soul that we've decided that we were born with. And that might be a delusion, but we've decided that we have to fill that hole with something else, and that's this thirst. And from that comes this immense feeling of inadequacy, of ineptitude, of insecurity. And this causes suffering. And we will do anything in our effort. We'll do anything that we can to try to comfort ourselves and to appease the suffering. And in that act, we put ourselves to sleep. It's easy to see in addiction cycles because it's ugly and it's dirty and it's on the surface. You know, people start trading family. People start trading all of their pleasures just to fall asleep and just not to have to feel that pain, right? That dimness. But we can also do the exact opposite with a practice in will, in mindfulness and present-mindedness. And I know these are huge fads right now, and I wish I could come up with some other bullshit words that other people haven't used yet just so I can make it my own. But then again, that strival for uniqueness is dumb, and so I'm just going to use it because the concepts themselves are eternally human. This idea that we can practice mind training, that we can practice mindfulness, that we can become one-pointed, that through willpower, we can construct a diamond bit for how we perceive and glean our consciousness. That doesn't mean that we can perceive the world better because we're stuck in this sensual lock where we have to collect information and data points. We have to hear, we have to see, we have to taste, we have to feel. But as it bounces through the mirror of consciousness and as we start to perceive inside, you know, there's a lot of things that can impact that. So, as we become more sensitive, as we read more, or we sit still more, or we listen to quietness more, or we find a teacher, or we find a group of people that makes us feel like we're home, that makes us feel like we can slow down. Once we can stop striving and stop collecting, all of a sudden the sensitivity starts to grow from a small seed. And one of two things can happen. Through fear that begins to encroach with that sensitivity, we can redouble backwards, we can run away. We can decide that we've hurt ourselves just because we've brought more pain into our lives. But if we're acting through compassion, you know, and in a good mean, you know, not overdoing it. But I think inside we all have an inner temperature, an inner register on when we are hurting ourselves, right? But I have this faith that as we soften up, if we can take this sensitivity and not let it scare us, then it grows into art. It grows into real world, real manifestations of our inner world. This goes back to something that I was speaking about towards the beginning. I feel that art comes from the same place. I feel that expression comes from the same place. This mystery, this void, right? All right, I'm going to go grab a poem and I'm going to start reading. I want to read you a couple poems to elucidate sort of this mystery that I'm trying to speak about. All right, here's the first one. And I haven't been writing a lot. I write intermittently, but I've written poetry since I was very young. And it's one of those important forms of expression for me that I've been rediscovering over the last couple of years. And it's something I want to work with and publish eventually and turn into something archetypical for me. But here goes. This was a couple weeks ago. Words spelled backwards speak into being. Isness before wispy clouds condensed. From raindrops that fell upwards towards ceiling. Made visible by fact that it doesn't exist. Paradox made brazen by man-made will, hysterical to think how such notions could ever paint past an illusion. Thus realism is not a potion, it's poison. The aim is to look into this mystery, this grand riddle from the Sphinx, that has no mouth, no words clearly, no idea, nor thought. Here, those sink. Sorry. Next. Oh my goodness. I should have had these on a different file. All right. I wrote this one just at the beginning of this week, and I was looking at a picture of a reflection. It was like a reflection of a pond, like on this on the ground, and in the reflection you can see leaves and a tree, and it's all refracted and changed, and it moved me for some reason. So I use it as my start, and I try to talk about what I feel. I always try to talk about. Here goes. Once I fell out of the world into a reflection of pond water. Desperate to be away, I soared, refracted by Midubs and Otis. Inside every dark, shadowy void lies intense beams of knowing, through trackless hidden joys, covered, impacted by careless doing. Yet on the other side of this reflection, looking in the twisty funhouse mirror, beside us all, boomerang of inflection, is contemplation, my best tool to steer me. So, sharing with these with you gives me a very special feeling. And this is what I'm trying to encourage, is for other people to want to go do that. And I'm not saying write poetry like me. I'm not saying write at all. I'm not saying go read a book. I'm not saying go investigate the Greeks or philosophy or religion. Your answer might be right here in your own world, in your own expression, and something that you're already doing. It could be in the clothes you wear. It could be in how you speak or how you conduct yourself. But there's this creativity in living our lives. There's a creativity in choice. Our life is an artistic expression. And that's another tenet that I harp on my show, is that we have to live creatively. We have to live expressively. And this has to do with that concept of softness and sensitivity and daring to be fully who we are. And that's a very individualistic philosophy, I know, especially since I always talk about all these group collective consciousnesses and these ideas of one mind, of Buddhism and Hinduism and all these other things that I love. But as Heraclitus talked about the river, you have a river that flows by, but you'll never step into the same river twice, and the river will never touch the same man, because we're always changing. And that does indicate a flux, a persistent change, evolution, devolution, antipathy, or entropy. That infers that, yes, but within the flux, within the constant change, there's a sameness in change. If everything's constantly changing, everything's equally empty. Everything's equally void. And so we can live fully in that, knowing that there's not a lot of responsibility otherwise, because we're still part of it. And anything you do, even a mistake, is fully part of it. And you can learn from it. You can be aware. You can craft your direction. You can live creatively. You can make sure you're the one holding the paintbrush. You can make sure you're the one driving the car. That's possible, 100%. When I think about this, you know, this life, it's beautiful. There's magic everywhere. You can always see something beautiful if you choose to look at it that way. So this is a lot of what I've been thinking about this week, slowing down, you know. But I'm a hard worker, and my job has requirements of me. And so more than more than half the week, probably not more than half my time. I'd say half my time's probably spent sleeping. But a large percentage of my time is spent in this environment where I have to push myself very hard. And over the years, I've used chemicals to maintain that. And I've been slowly backing down on chemical infrastructure, propping me up in certain aspects of my life. And so, like, work me is almost like a Dr. Jekyll and Mr. Hyde situation. You know, because here right now, I'm a very calm person. And at work, I'm not a calm person. And learning how to rationalize these two me's has caused a lot of difficulty and strife. And like yesterday was a difficult holiday weekend, and my boss had asked me to work months ago, and then a couple weeks ago said he wouldn't need me, so I had nothing in line. And then the day before yesterday, on Friday, he asked, "Oh, we are going to need you. Do you think you could come in?" And I probably could have begged and found somebody to do it, but my stomach turned. I felt an unease and sadness because the part of me that wanted to support people always would always say yes. And the affirmation of life that consistent yes towards opportunity. But in this situation, something beckoned for me to rest, beckoned for me to slow down, right? And so I sent him a text Friday evening and lied and said, you know, I really don't think that my parents are going to be able to watch him. They're decompressing while the family's gone. They told me that they need time, which is probably true, but they didn't tell me that. I used that as reinforcement to make me feel more comfortable. And Saturday came and I have this bizarre feeling because I know I was needed, but I chose to rest. And because I have these centers of intense energy that fight for me, that are always there for me to help support me, get me through times of needs of intense energy. But it's still there, even when I'm slow. And so, like a hot spot for a volcano as it moves underneath the Pacific Ocean and eventually peaks out into these little mountain peaks, I have these little intermittent moments throughout my day of tension and anger. And these things are usually directed towards the closest person in my life, my son, which then turns into an immense guilt because I didn't want to do that. I didn't want to be angry with him, right? And then all of a sudden I've turned a 5-minute occurrence into an hour of difficult emotions. And then if that can happen 2 or 3 times in a day, even though that's still less than a quarter of the whole time of my day, I could have the feeling that I've used my time not wisely, or that I've had a bad day. Oh no, I don't want to reinforce that and tell myself that that's the story for it. And most of the time could have still been outside of that difficult emotional setting, but it's linked to my needs. It's linked to my work, it's linked to habits and what I've had to do. And so one of the things I've been thinking a lot about is how do I rectify these two me's and how do I bring them together? And I've seen bits and pieces of that because I can work in an immensely fast situation and still be very calm and slow inside. I've learned that I can be in a calm day and then sprinkle activity through my day in small enough portions that I don't rile myself up, you know, like, so yesterday I would read for like 45 minutes to an hour, and then I go do 20 or 30 minutes of chores and I read. So it'd be slow work, slow work, slow work. But as soon as I start to feel my anxiety creep up, because as I'm working, my energy keeps rising, and then I'll get anxious and I'll start to get nauseous, and then I won't want to read anymore, you know? And so it's like finding this work-life balance that everybody's talking about. So this is me talking a lot about myself, but I feel that there's probably something that you can relate to in there. And the main idea is that I want you to consider the different yous that you have and how they might be in contest, but how they also might all be playing supporting roles. And the guilt and the shame that we feel towards certain parts of ourselves. sometimes might be extra additional pain and stress that we don't need to lump on ourselves in those time periods. And I think that's really important to think about. And part of being able to see that comes through sensitivity. It comes through awareness. Well, I had a good Thanksgiving, too. How was yours? Are you a holiday person? I saw a lot of people, you know, bitter about having to cooperate with organization. And this organization, this nationwide holiday system, you know, requires a bit of cooperation. And a lot of the time that inner rebel can see it as stupid. But for me, Thanksgiving has always been important. Even when I was young, it would fill me with this sense of connection. Gratitude is immensely important. Immensely important. It can change everything. Just being thankful for our circumstances. And even for our difficulties. And that's one of the things that Thanksgiving taught me when I was young. It's just the niceness and the warmth of being with family. And I had my whole family with me this year, which hasn't happened in several years. Usually everybody's out of town. My sister came with my nephew and my niece. My grandparents were there, my uncle. It was busy and it was wonderful. I'm very grateful just to be part of it. So if you had a family event that you did enjoy, and I would love to hear about it. If you want to talk about why you don't like family, I would love to talk about it. You can email me at thegingerbreadmansdialogues@gmail.com. I'll always be a source and an ear for you. I'm going to go grab a couple texts, quote a little bit, and I'll grab Odin and we'll sign out for the day. Thank you. Thank you so much for giving me your time. It means a lot to me that you've chosen to spend this time with me. And I'm very grateful that you're breathing right now. And I'm so grateful that you're here with me. This is from the book by Osho that I'm reading, Maturity, The Responsibility of Being Oneself. This is from the first chapter, Definitions, about halfway through, page 13. The most fundamental thing to be remembered is that life is dialectical. It exists through duality. It is a rhythm between opposites. You cannot be happy forever, otherwise happiness will lose all meaning. You cannot be in harmony forever, otherwise you will become unaware of the harmony. Harmony has to be followed by discord again and again, and happiness has to be followed by unhappiness. Every pleasure has its own pain, and every pain has its own pleasure. Unless one understands this duality of existence, one remains in unnecessary misery. Accept the total, with all its agonies and all of its ecstasy. Don't hanker for the impossible. Don't desire that there should be only ecstasy and no agony. Ecstasy cannot exist alone. It needs a contrast. Agony becomes the blackboard. Then ecstasy becomes very clear and loud. Just in the darkness of night, the stars are so bright. The darker is the night, the brighter are the stars. In the day, they don't disappear. They simply become invisible. You cannot see them because there is no contrast. Think of a life without death. It will be unendurable pain, an unendurable existence. It will be impossible to live without death. Death defines life, gives it a kind of intensity. Because life is fleeting, each moment becomes precious. If life is eternal, then who cares? One can wait for tomorrow forever. Then who will live now and here? Because tomorrow there is death. It forces you to live now and here. You have to plunge into the present moment. You have to go to its ultimate depth because who knows? The next moment may come or it may not. Yeah, he's kind of repetitive, but and again, a lot of it's not very original. It's still good stuff to me. I'm gonna go find my boy.
Hello, it's Ask Owen. again. How are you guys doing today?
Good, thanks. How are you?
Good.
Nice. What's up?
Nothing.
Nothing? Are you having a good weekend?
Yes. Yes, I'm having a good weekend.
That's good. You ready for school tomorrow?
Yes.
Fun. Go see your teacher?
Yeah.
Nice. All right. Well, you want to give me advice for today? You have anything really that you've been thinking about?
I don't know. I don't really have anything to talk about.
Okay, that's fine too.
Well,
bye.
Bye.